underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Larry Rule's new book, Breaking the Rules, is a profoundly personal account of the impact of complex trauma on a man's life. Larry's father sought comfort from his only son, smothering him not only with his affection, but his sexuality, blurring critical boundaries that would prove deeply debilitating. Larry's mother, with her spiraling, ever-changing mental illness, kept the family in a constant state of anxiety. By the time Larry graduated from high school, overwhelming sadness and suicidal thoughts took root, plaguing him for decades. Just a warning, we do discuss the topics of sexual abuse and sexuality during this broadcast. Breaking the Rules is Larry Rule's new memoir, and we welcome him to this week's book show. Larry, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me here, Joe.
At what point, given the subject matter, given what your childhood, what your life had been like, at what point did you feel it necessary for you to share this story and to talk about it in such an intimate way?
As a survivor, I was struggling with day-to-day life and how to navigate, you know, things that came up, triggers or anniversaries, and just sort of finding my way day-to-day, and particularly around certain holidays. So on Father's Day, 4 years ago, I used it as an opportunity to see if I could move through some of the frustrated feelings I felt around that holiday in particular, and sat down to start writing and just, you know, poured out my heart for an afternoon.
And was that an outline? Was that an idea of where you would ultimately go with the book?
No, that was just an emotional purge. That was the day that I sat down and actually just wrote out what had happened to me. It was the first time I had actually ever done that, you know, from start to finish. And it just felt good to just get it out.
Did you say to yourself, okay, because at that point you're thinking it's just for you, right?
I did. That's exactly right. Yeah. I thought it was just for me.
And at what point then do you think, okay, I can work this into something that is telling the story?
I'm not sure if I ever talked about this, but 6 months later, I actually took myself to a Russian Orthodox monastery not far from here in Albany. And it was there that I went to sit down and find some real private time to just really write. And it was at the end of those 3 days that I thought I was onto something in terms of an outline and a sort of a full experience of telling my story.
When you think about it, and this is a question I often ask, and it's do you look at it as I am writing this to help me come to terms with the horribleness that I have encountered in my life, or is it through the work of therapy and through self-discovery that you are given the personal permission to write a story like this?
I would say I'm a total combination of both of those things.
Okay.
Through therapy, you know, I had that as a foundation to start the other and to really sit down and start to write. And for me, because things were so chaotic and I was, you know, I had two troubled parents, there was so much untangling to do that writing it out felt like I was just untangling my brain and just sorting out, you know, what happened, when it happened, what it looked like, what it felt like, starting the process of pulling it all apart.
Was there ever a point where you thought to yourself as a kid that this was a normal childhood? Because you write about the sexual abuse from your father. So is that the beginning? Is that the starting point? Or did it go much further back than that?
There was never really a time where I thought our life was normal. I learned very quickly at a very young age, by second grade or so, that I was to hold anything that happened in our house as a secret. And I knew that things were very, very different behind closed doors in our house. I was trained to protect that as sacred, that anything that happened in our house was meant to just stay there. You know, looking back on it, when I was a young adult, I started to understand the impact that all of that had on me and how confusing it all was. But I think even as a kid, I knew that things were very different in our house.
How do you know that you have to keep quiet? That what is happening behind those walls is to stay behind those walls?
In my case, I had two parents that told me, you know, that just drove home the fact that my sister and I had parents that loved us very much, how lucky we were, and that there was nothing that the four of us couldn't handle that came up. You know, I don't like the word brainwashing, but it was this sort of brainwashing that happened of, we are together, we will tackle everything together, and don't talk about it outside the house.
When you think of that now, do you realize that, I guess the question is, were you ever compelled to, were you ever tempted to talk about it outside of the house?
Yes, in second grade I did. You know, it was the first time that I made that attempt and spoke to a teacher. She noticed that I wasn't paying attention. I was really tired, wasn't sleeping. My parents fought all through the night, often. When all the other kids went out to recess, she kept me behind and said, is everything okay at home? And I think at the time I made reference to my mother hitting my father. And of course, the teacher did the right thing and called home. And that night we sat down to a family meeting. My mother wouldn't speak to me. She wouldn't look at me at dinner. And my father took me and my sister in the other room and said, don't ever do that again. And I didn't.
At what point did the sexual abuse begin?
Before I even started kindergarten.
So
I was,
I mean,
very young, four.
An infant.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. It's funny. You said it. I have a hard time saying that even now. So I always use the age of four and before kindergarten to describe when it started. It feels like the safer answer for me personally to say. But yes, I was very young.
Yeah. And because it is, I mean, obviously it isn't right at any age, but there is a horrific thought when it happens to a child so young.
Absolutely. And in recovery and working with my therapist, there was a long time that I just thought that what I remembered was just impossible. I was very hard to come to terms with what happened and what I remembered and what I knew to be true.
And you write about this, but it was regular, right? I mean,
yes.
it was not a one time
no.
or a one off. It was a regular occurrence throughout your childhood.
Very regular, yes.
How aware was your mother of what was happening?
You know, my mom was so checked out in her own stuff. She was never diagnosed when I was a kid with any mental illness. She has since been diagnosed, but she was so self-absorbed that it's hard to tell of what she knew and what she didn't. You know, I've been asked, did your mother know? And I believe my mother did know on some level what was going on, but she was so self-consumed that it was hard to ever gauge what she was aware of outside of her own desires, her own needs, her own rage. It was hard to ever really get a sense of what she was aware of.
There was always fighting going on in the house. What would they fight about?
So my mom would really lash out at my father against anything that she considered an act against her. Coming home late from work, you know, was he having an affair, or she imagined that. As I got older, the fights were, you know, she became jealous of any blonde person that existed on TV. I know, and the fights would ensue just based on that. I mean, we would all like race to change the channel if the Mandrell sisters came on the TV, because it would just start this war where my mother would just pummel my dad. Yeah, it was dicey. It could be anything, Joe. I mean, it could be the slightest perceived insult to my, you know, my dad looking down at what she put in front of him at dinner. It could be anything.
She would fight and rebel against any slight to her. What about to you? What about to your sister?
To my sister, on one very bad occasion, she brutalized my sister on one specific day. To me, no. You know, I learned from a young age. Again, I was sort of groomed to nurture each of my parents in a very different way. And I understood that if I remained my mom's ally, if I was able to tap into what she needed to nurture her, to do that for her, then I was safe, and I developed my own safe place with my mom that way. So no, I mean, aside from her getting annoyed at me for not taking out the trash or angry with me, she never unleashed her anger at me.
And you describe it that as your father was regularly sexually abusing you, that he saw that as affection, right? He saw that as love, not as an aggressive act.
Not at all. Even much later, when I finally you know, confronted him in my way, you know, his response was, "I only ever loved you." You know, that was always his way. Even as I got older and the most violent parts of the abuse had stopped, you know, it was always this this smarminess and this intimacy that he displayed with me that continued.
You used the word, and you said it wasn't one that you were happy with, but it is, it does seem appropriate, which is a brainwashing. With that, does it some way allow you to compartmentalize and have any semblance of a regular childhood, or is it always permeated by that?
I think that I definitely both compartmentalized and dissociated quite a bit as a kid. And there were aspects that seemed, there were days and there could be weeks that seemed normal. You know, there were times that my mom could be present, that she could be fun, that we could have fun together. With my father, the things that I had to do with him were always sort of tainted and I was always afraid, obviously. But, you know, there were ways that I could sort of check out and say, okay, right now, this looks okay. This looks normal.
As you grow and as you go into, as you mature, was there a differing in the relationship? Did the relationship between you and your father mature as you matured physically and emotionally?
You know, in many ways, I think that I matured and my dad didn't. The activities we did shifted. You know, he started taking me on hunting and fishing trips and things that I absolutely hated. And for many reasons, but I had no choice. I was not given a choice. And even when I tried to get out of those things, my mother would really guilt trip me into, you know, saying things like, well, how would you feel if your dad dies while he's driving to the hunting camp? And, you know, how would you feel if he drowned in the stream trout fishing? And, you know, she made me go with him, which is just really makes my head spin some when I think about it now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Larry Rule is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the book is Breaking the Rules, a Memoir. When it comes to telling the story, you are very honest, and you certainly don't have to tell me this, but did you get everything out that you wanted to get out? I mean, did you feel that it was all or nothing?
I said everything that I felt I needed to in this book in terms of what it was like coming to terms with having been sexually abused by my dad. Have I said it all? No. I mean, there are definitely some unresolved things around my mom.
Yeah.
And as much as the book is also about her, there's definitely some things that I have yet to say. But other than that, I feel that my first book, I have said what I've needed to. Yes.
At what point did the breaking, if you will, come in for mm-hmm. you where you started to rebel and say, okay, enough?
Okay. So that happened about 10 years ago. Long story short, I had to bail my parents out financially. I owned their home. I
yeah.
owned the home that all of this happened to me into. And part of the deal was that they would stop spending. But I went home and discovered that my mother's compulsive spending had continued. So I wrote an email and said, this is a real problem. And my father's response, there's something in his response that really caused me to have a bit of an emotional breakdown. And I was unraveling. I was really in dangerous territory. I felt suicidal. I was really at my wit's end. So I asked for space. I asked for some time with no contact.
You were how old at this point?
My early 30s.
Okay.
Yes. So I asked for a break in contact. My mother was having a surgery, a knee replacement, and she basically said, if my son is not home to care for me, I will no longer speak to him. And she disowned me, because I could not face seeing either of my parents at the time. I was understanding what had happened at the hands of my dad, so seeing them just felt unsafe. So I ended the relationship with my father. My mother disowned me, and that's when I started to really break the silence, break the rules, as you will, and start to say, I've had enough.
And that never goes away, right? That feeling, because, I mean, there's a play on words here of your last name being Rule. But you feel, I assume even at the time, that you're really doing something at some level wrong.
Absolutely. When I first asked for time and I got the emails from my dad expressing his sadness and his devastation that I was somehow pulling away, I worried for the first 6 months at least that he would kill himself. He had been threatening to kill himself since I was a kid, you know, if he was not loved enough. So I was filled with that fear again, that if I asked for distance or time, and at the time I didn't know how long it was going to be, I didn't know that it would be my final decision, I was terrified that, something would happen and that I would be to blame.
And when this happened, when had the sexual abuse stopped?
That's tough. I have a hard time saying when the sexual abuse stopped because of the way the affection had always continued.
Right.
So I have a hard time coming up with like what age I say that it really stopped. I mean, can I say 13? Probably. But his affection continued. It's hard for me to sort of have a clear answer on that.
Does your understanding of your own sexuality play a role in that understanding and of that, of the relationship and the affectionate relationship that you have with your father?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I think that certainly around puberty, I was really struggling. I had, you know, I knew what my attractions were, and yet they felt so wrong. It almost, there was also a dark quality to it that made me feel an extra layer of shame, if it's even possible. So yes, it was all shrouded in disgust and fear.
And that was one of the things I couldn't get over in the book, because it seems like it would be impossible to extricate the affection and the attraction that you would have toward a man versus the attraction that you have for the man that's in your life, who is your father, who, as you said, is just the opposite of
right.
an attraction.
Yeah, I mean, to pull that apart, to understand, like, you know, you just used the word, to as an adult, to look back and to not be full of all hate for my dad, to have to look at, well, did I like him? Did I like this man? Was there something? Did I love him? You know, did I love my father? And yet still look at this as a gay man and look at desire and look at the ways that I express myself. And was I ever going to be able to balance the two out and to figure out what was what? And that's something, when you asked me earlier if I've said everything in the book, that's definitely something that's ongoing for me. Mm. It's an ongoing process.
You know, this is going to sound silly, but I'm going to say it anyway, which is, you know, breakdowns aside, there is a point for you from late adolescence into adulthood when you have this breaking of the rules where you are a functioning human being who is going out into the world and doing things, so much so that you are able to be in a financial position to own the home where all of these horrible things happened.
Yes. You know, I was thinking, I'm so glad you brought that up. I was thinking about this on my drive up here today of how, you know, everything I talked about earlier about my childhood, how I was meant to keep secrets and pretend everything was fine. That is one thing that I learned at such a young age that has served me. You know, people ask me, was there anything good about your childhood? That served me because as an adult, as a professional, as somebody who had a career, I was able to make it look like everything was together. It's all fine. Nothing wrong here. And that facade really served me and propelled me into solid careers. And I made it work for me. So I did. I functioned. I mean, I may have been unraveling personally, and certainly the unraveling got more intense and I really, you know, fell apart. But for many years, I was able to hold it together under that same facade that had been ingrained in me since I was a young boy.
Without getting overly personal, and just by the nature of the question, of course, I am getting overly personal, but you can tell me to back off at any time. But having had the great pleasure of meeting your husband, and I didn't realize until I was talking to the two of you of how much he's a part of this story, really, of how you are able to navigate a relationship with another human being as you are dealing with all of this. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, how in the name of God could you ever do it without the love and support of another human being?
Yes. I mean, that is so true. And it was so equal. There were times where it was absolutely 50-50, where how do I continue my life with this person in my life, this man, right, who has become family? That word in and of itself is tainted for me. And yet, how do I survive without the support and the love that he is willing to give me? So it became this balance, and we got ourselves into some real trouble for a while there, and had, you know, when I was coming out with the truth and he was having to hold it with me and I was still lying and full of secrets and hiding what was happening from him, you know, hiding the memories that were coming up, we had some real work to do. And I'm so grateful that he was willing to meet me and to hold it all with me, and he has. And, you know, now we're going to be together 20 years this year. That's mind-boggling to me that, you know, 10 years ago, we had declared defeat, and here we are.
And that is, it's completely understandable, because you look at any relationship and there are going to be moments where the other person in that relationship is not going to fully understand. But there's also that point where I assume you look and you step in his shoes and say, oh, well, did I ever bargain for this?
Right. There were definitely times where I have been, you know, riddled with guilt over, you know, the idea of, God, he really did get a lot more than he bargained for, you know, and who would have thought? But at the same time, you know, it's allowed him to shift his own thinking about people and behavior and to deepen his capacity for compassion. These are all things that he has said to me. I'm not saying this about him.
Right.
But it's really allowed us as a couple to become stronger and to understand human nature a little bit better.
And the good parts of human nature.
Absolutely.
I mean, not just the horrible
Definitely
parts of
the good
human
parts.
Nature.
Definitely the good parts.
And does that allow you to appreciate it more?
Absolutely. You know, I look at what he offered me in terms of support, and it went beyond. You know, his parents became my parents. They stepped in without ever questioning me in terms of why my relationship with my own parents had come to an end. They accepted me, they loved me, and they became my parents, nurturing, loving, accepting ones.
The relationship with your parents now is non-existent.
No, and you know, as a result of writing the book and during that time, I finally started to understand and accept that ending the relationship with my parents was the biggest gift and tool that I gave myself. You know, to shed the society rules of they're your parents no matter what, to let that go has been huge for my recovery.
And is it as concrete for them, or are there ever times where they reach out? I mean, I know that you were disowned, but is there a time where they reach out?
My mother never reached out, not a note, not a card. My father tried to maintain contact up until about 5 years ago through notes, letters, messages. It was horrible. It was really, really challenging for me. I would hear his voice on the machine, and I would just fall apart. But he finally stopped about 5 years ago, and there's been no further contact.
Are the two still together?
Yes. Yes. My mother has deteriorated, but I only get, you know, bits and pieces occasionally.
Are you ready for, and this is a modeling question, and I apologize, but are you ready for their passing?
I don't know that I'm ever going to be ready. I don't know what I think about that. The only thing I can say with certainty is that I will feel a sense of some relief upon his.
Right.
There is a level of fear that will go away.
Because I have talked to other survivors who have said to me, well, and usually in the case of those interviews, it's been the person has already passed, the parent has already passed, and they said, okay, but they were really, they died to me many, many years ago.
I think that there's a part of my heart that remains very connected to my mom, and there's parts of that heart connection that are still unresolved, that I don't know what that will look like later. My dad, I feel very settled in how I feel right now. And like I said, I do know that there would be a sense of relief when he's gone.
And with your sister?
My sister and I remain in contact. We have a good relationship. That's been wonderful. That's been an unexpected gift to me, that she was able to say, if you think this book is going to help other survivors, then you have my full support. That's been huge. And my sister has been able to validate my experience without saying too much. So we remain close, even with the challenges of the fact that she's still involved with my parents.
From the first time I met you limited, but certainly the times that I've met you and that we have talked, you seem like a happy human being.
You know, I am. I am, and I spent many, many years where I never thought I'd be able to say that, and I really am. You know, there have been ways that I've been able to find joy and to, dare I say, have fun. That word does not, you know, settle lightly with me. I've struggled with the whole idea of fun. You know, in workshops and in different work, they tell you to connect to your younger self or to the under. I've always struggled with that, like just in movement or just in ways of being. So I've had to find ways as a 45-year-old man to experience joy, and I do.
Well, the book is beautiful. The story is so important, and I can't thank you enough for writing it and for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much, and you know, I talk to you anytime, Joe.
Larry Rule's new memoir is Breaking the Rules, published by Central Recovery Press. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.